everyone for joining us today. We appreciate you taking the time and being committed to learning. This is Monkey Management 2.0. So if you've taken monkey management in the past, you might be familiar with some of what we're going to talk about. But the goal of today is to put it into different and sort of a new context, add a little bit more to it than you've got in the past. So even if you've taken this course before, I think you'll find some new and different spins on how we're approaching the concept today. And that's really what these roundtables are all about. The roundtables are a way to talk about new ideas or talk about old ideas in new ways and give us a different sort of spin and flavor on what we're doing. So that's what we're here. It's monkey management. And of course, monkey management is all about task management and delegation. We're going to talk about all those things, but we're going to talk about them in the context of our teams and sort of a bigger picture in a few places. Monkey Management 2.0. I started diving back into this topic that we've been, throwing around and talking about as a class for, three or four, five, six, 7 years now, whatever it's been. And the question that I started this particular approach with it was what kind of manager do we want to be? What kind of a manager do you want to be as an individual? What do you want to be known for as a manager, as a leader? So I'm going to open it up with sort of that thought provoker as an opening bid. And I know it's a big question, but I'll see what you guys have to say. As you think about yourself as a leader of your team within the company, what kind of a leader do you want to be known for being? What kind of a leader do you want to be seen as?
I like the coaching aspect of it. Leading the team, but being part of the team. I like not being dumped on. I like to add it back into their court. But I think coaching is my biggest thing.
Awesome. Yep. Leader as a coach is absolutely a way to be seen and a goal to be reached. I think that's a great, great one. Good. Thank you so much, John.
Being reliable. Getting things done. When things are asked of you, you get it done. So dependable, reliable.
Dependable, reliable. Someone who gets things done. Good. Getting results. Excellent. Very good.
Someone that's easy to talk to, that they don't feel like they're scared to come to you.
The reason I bring this up is because I think part of what really makes monkey management work is monkey management is it's a sequel book. If you don't know the history of the concept, and it's a book, and it's a sequel book to a series called The 1 Minute Manager by Ken Blanchard and Spencer Johnson. And their approach was really based around an archetype of a leader, a type of leader that they felt like was the right type of leader for a new generation of leadership. And so the monkey management concept fits within that. It's one piece of the bigger picture. And that's why with this class, I wanted to step back for a second and think about it, because for some of you, you've clearly thought about it. You've got an idea of what you're trying to hit. Some of us don't put a lot of time into thinking about it. And that's not a critique. And that's not if you didn't speak up, don't take it the wrong way. I think it's one of those things that we tend to not think about what type of leader we want to be seen, what type of leader we want to be, how we want to be seen on a day-to-day basis. Because often on a day-to-day basis, we're just trying to get things done. We're just trying to accomplish the task, get our team supported and across the finish line one day at a time. But in order for the monkey management approach to truly work, it has to be fit inside a broader context of the type of leader you are. And so my first challenge for you guys taking this today and thinking about what you're going to do different or walk away from is, if you haven't thought about how do you want to be perceived as a leader, what kind of leader do you want to be, then I challenge you to take some time and think about it. Because if you aim at nothing, you'll hit it every time. And if you don't have an idea for yourself of what am I trying to be, who am I trying to be as a manager of people or a leader within the company, then how do you know if you're hitting it or not? How do you know if the things that you're doing, the actions you're taking, are moving in that direction? And if you figure out or think you've got a good idea of what you want to be, then I would challenge you to, how can you make it even something more than it is? And not to let good enough be good enough. Because I think at the heart of monkey management and delegation and task management and all this stuff we're going to talk about is this idea of, I want to be a certain type of leader, and that certain type of leader is one that always wants to get a little bit better. Start there. Start with the why and the who, and what do I want to be as a leader, and how do I want to be seen? Because as I've said, the monkey management idea fits inside of what Blanchard and Johnson created as their one-minute manager ideal. And that was a very specific approach and style of leadership. And their goal was to create a balance between two ends of a spectrum that they felt like were both successful, but not necessarily equally balanced leadership styles. So Spencer and Johnson said that there were two extremes of leadership styles, and then there's a second axis that I'll explain. But on one end of this extreme, you've got, let's call it authoritarian style, and on the other end, democratic style. So these are the two opposite ends of the leadership spectrum, with the democratic style being very much about participation and everybody votes on what they think is the right way to go and getting constant and solicited feedback from the team and making decisions with consensus and group involvement at every stage. And on the opposite end, the authoritarian style being very much leader driven, chain of command, top down. This is what I say. This is what you guys do, handing out the marching orders, etc. Now, I promised you that there were two axes on this, and I want to make sure I'm clear about it. So this exists on a spectrum from one side to the other. There is a second axis to this, and that is that when we talk about these styles, it's sort of the immediate response of people to go, well, oh, democratic sounds good, authoritarian sounds bad. That's sort of the culture that we live in. But I don't want you to think of them necessarily that way, because if you add this second axis, what you realize is at the top of the second axis is a servant leader. And a servant leader is someone who has their team's best interest at heart and wants to help their team get better and wants to serve their team in the best way possible, right? So that's one end of that spectrum. At the other end of that spectrum are the asshole leaders, and we know who they are. And you can definitely be on any part of this range, except that around here, we have a pretty hard and fast rule that we don't let anybody play below that line. And so I want to bring that up because I don't want you to automatically associate that a democratic leader is a more right type of leader to be. An authoritarian style leader is a jerk way to be a manager. There are authoritarian servant leaders. There are democratic servant leaders. We're just going to assume that all of our leaders are good leaders in the servant category at the top side of that graph. So let's move on to talking about these two extremes, and I want to think about, so what does this look like? Because where you fall on the spectrum personally has a lot to do with how easy you're going to have at managing your monkeys. And Spencer Johnson and Ken Blanchard, when they put all this together, their whole goal with the one-minute manager ideal was that they said democratic leadership doesn't quite work, authoritarian doesn't quite work. We're trying to hit the center of this as best as possible. But the problem for most managers is that they tend to exist at one of the more opposite ends of the spectrum. So my question for you guys, what does a extreme democratic type leader look like? What is someone who, they're still a servant leader, they're a good leader, but their style is extremely democratic? What does the extreme end of that tend to look like if you've ever worked for one or if you know one? What's that experience like? What's their leadership style in practice?
Everything is a vote. There's not one decision made. Everything that needs to be done is basically a vote, or it's not, you know, this is the way and, you know, and this is why, you know, so.
They're trying to make everybody happy. They want to listen to the crowd at all times. They want to give the people what they want. And everything comes down to a vote and everything becomes a group consensus. And at the extreme end of that, it can be paralyzing because what you have way out here, someone who they really love their team, they want to be doing everything right, but they're way too democratic. These are pushovers. They let the team make all the decisions for them, right? The team has to decide on everything. They won't give you a straight answer. They won't lay down and say, this is the way it's going to go. And for people who work on those teams, you know, sometimes having a kind of a pushover boss feels like it's great because you can get away with a lot. But the reality is high performers, great performers, that's not what they want. They want somebody at the end of the day who can make a decision, give them an answer, who will take, you know, that leadership step to make the tough call when it needs to happen. So if you're way out being too democratic and listening to the team too much, even for the right reasons as a servant leader, you can easily fall into that pushover category and your team can become frustrated. And that's what, you know, again, Blanchard and Johnson had seen was there were these leaders who they really considered themselves servant leaders, oh, I have such a democratic style. I listen to my people about everything. But in the end, they were becoming pushovers, or they were becoming paralyzed by consensus and couldn't actually get certain things done. On the extreme other end, what does an authoritarian servant leader look like? What's somebody who, it's their style to be very command and control, but they're also still a servant leader. They're definitely trying to help their people and do things the right way, and their heart's in the right place. What would make it, what would you expect to see from someone who is very much command and control, but also very much, I want to do for my team, I want to be there for my people, I want to serve my team and my people? We call these the superheroes. And the superhero leader is that leader who really loves their team, they love their people, and they want to do everything for them. I know what I'm doing. I'm great at the job. That's how I got the job. I was so good at this that I was able to get promoted to the next level. And where I'm comfortable, where I'm at my best, is doing the same job that you guys do. And so I'm going to swoop in with my cape on, and I'm going to do everything for you. I'm going to help you out. I'm going to take all the stuff that's on your plates and take it onto mine, because I'm a superhero. I'm a servant leader. But ultimately, that's a very authoritarian style. You know, we don't talk about, we build superheroes up as this great ideal, but we don't talk about the fact that they're oftentimes also very authoritarian, right? They have the power and the ability to get whatever they want. And so they can use that power for good or evil. But when they use it for good, it's still an authoritarian approach. The superhero leader is the opposite end of the democratic leader. They're not a pushover, but almost to the extreme other way. They don't want to let anything go. They don't want to give anything up. And in fact, they're constantly taking on their team's responsibilities, taking on their team's work, taking on their team's monkeys for the right reasons, but it's still the wrong approach. It's still too far to an extreme. And that's the key that I want you guys to keep in mind here, is that when it comes to any extremes, extremes are bad. Pro tip, extremes are bad. All things in moderation, even moderation. The authoritarian servant leader is a superhero. Ultimate power does it all, and so they do, but they don't delegate. They don't let their team make mistakes. Their team can't learn. They can't grow. They can't develop because they're taking it all on themselves. The other extreme is that pushover in the democratic side, you know, who abdicates every decision to the group, who doesn't take a stand or a position, never gives you an answer, only options. That's tough too, but the real monkey management problem ends to come into that top left-hand corner the most, where we see those superhero leaders. And if that's ringing home and hitting a little bit hard, good, you're in the right place, don't panic. But we definitely see it. We see it a lot. We see it a lot, especially with younger, newer leaders who are coming up from a previous position where they knew how to do the job so well, their now default becomes, well, I'm going to do the job great for my people by doing all their stuff for them. Unfortunately, it robs our teams of a real opportunity. So in their book, The 1 Minute Manager, the original foundational book, Blanchard and Johnson laid out three keys to successful leadership. The first is aligned goals and objectives, that what a manager expects and what an employee expects to be doing have to be aligned, that you can't have people working on the wrong priorities at the wrong time in the wrong way, or else if you don't get what you're expecting, you're going to have conflict. And so key number one to good management is to constantly be realigning goals and objectives, checking in on your people to make sure they're working on the right things, focused on the right priorities at all times. The next thing that they talk about is to praise what goes right. Blanchard and Johnson believed deeply that if you want employees to continue to do the right things, you have to praise and reward them for doing the right things. And that one of the things that many managers miss is they don't take the time to recognize great behavior. They usually are pretty good about identifying and correcting problem behavior, but truthfully, the better value is on praising the right behaviors, because when people are praised, they will repeat what they've done. And when others see their peers getting praised for doing something, they're more likely to chase after it as well. Positive reinforcement is such an important key to management. Of course, the third key is that redirecting when things get off the rails, which kind of ties back into the aligned goals and objectives. And so Blanchard and Johnson believed that in the balance between being too much of an autocrat and too much of a democrat, while still always being a servant leader, was that 1 minute manager they defined as being able to align and set proper goals, praising people when they do things right, redirecting when things go wrong, offering guidance and answers and decisions, but not stepping over to the point of taking on their people's work for us. So what is our goal as leaders? Well, we want to get the best out of our people. And it's safe to assume that our people want to do their best. people who don't have a drive to win or high standards, they don't end up succeeding in this culture. Around here, they don't last long. So it's our job as leaders to lead them to their highest potential because it's where they want to go. All of our people, all of our sales reps and our merchandisers and our drivers, our warehouse folks, we brought them in. They've survived and thrived in our culture because they have that desire to win, that need to succeed. All we have to do is lead them to the right spot to do that and support them along the way. If we're too permissive, we're not promoting them. We're not supporting them enough. If we're a pushover, we're not doing enough for them. But if we're too authoritarian, if we try to be their superhero, we end up ultimately capping their potential and keeping them from getting better and growing in their work. So how does all of this relate to the idea of monkeys? Well, the fundamental change that occurs when you step into a higher level of leadership is that you now have to do things through others. You are no longer responsible for the tasks. You are responsible for making sure others are doing the tasks. Most people fall into the trap of becoming a monkey keeper as new managers. They take on the superhero role because it's comfortable, or sometimes worse, it's the only thing they know how to do. I know how to be a great sales rep. I'll be a great sales rep times five for all my people. That's how they're going to succeed, is me helping them along. They don't take the time to properly delegate or teach. They only know how to do, so they do it, but they do it harder and faster until they either find out that they can run that fast forever, or oftentimes they burn out in flames. And this is why so often we see people promote one level, but then never make it another and another level beyond that, because they never are able to make that transition. And that's why monkey management is to your benefit. It's not just for your benefit, it's really for the benefit of your team, but it brings you benefits as a bonus as well. So here's my question, my next question, for those of you who have taken this class or read the book or know things about this. We've been talking about the idea of a monkey. What is a monkey? In the context of monkey management, it's important to know what monkeys really are. So does anybody know the definition of what is a monkey, or think they have an idea?
A task.
Something that requires action. And Blanchard and Johnson are specific to take the step and say, it's the next thing that has to be done, the next decision, the next task, the next action that needs to take place for progress to occur. It is fun to imagine them as little monkeys that ride around on your shoulder. If you think of them as little imaginary monkeys, that makes it even easier and more fun. But that's what a monkey is. It's a decision or a task. It's the next thing that has to do in order for progress to occur. Let's talk about the monkeys on your desks right now. Give me some examples of monkeys that you guys are dealing with. What are some decisions or choices or things to do that you know are sitting around your office? Take a look around your desk or wherever you're sitting. Maybe scan your inbox on your email real quick and give me some examples. What are some monkeys that you own right now that you're having to deal with? Just toss them out there.
Gathering green mile logs.
Gathering up the green mile logs. That is a monkey. Good.
Beverage report being automated.
Oh, okay. Beverage report automation. Good idea. There's probably some sub monkeys into that, right? It's a pretty big monkey. It's almost a gorilla. So there's probably like, there's the, you know, look up this piece or pull this report or get this list to audit against. So when thinking about monkeys, you might want to consider break them down into the smallest next possible step, because if we think about too many monkeys at once, it feels like a zoo and it's hard to manage. So think about what are the very next things you need to do in the project or thing you've got going on. It's important. It really is important that as you're thinking about your monkeys, break them down to the smallest possible things, because they feel overwhelming when we think about our bigger projects. Monkey management takes place at the lowest possible level. So really think about, like, what are the next things you guys need to do? I've got a couple of monkeys right now. One of them is we're working on a new tutorial, an online tutorial for the new EO Market website. The next step in that process for me is editing the file clips that I made today into a master video clip. So my next monkey on that particular project, the monkey is edit the files together. After that, the next monkey is going to be finish the voiceover work. And then the next monkey after that will be to put in the motion graphics and transitions. But each one of those is a monkey in that particular project. I'm also working on a new assessment tool that we're going to use, which will probably be replacing Caliper with something else. The next monkey on that is to send out a communication to a test group that we're going to do. Earlier this morning, I had the monkey of meeting with the consultant, and then I had a monkey to draft a communication and send it to Pete for review, and now the next monkey is send out the first communication round. So really break your stuff down. When you're thinking about a monkey, you really want to break it down to its smallest level. And the reason is because it's easier to care for those monkeys when they are at their lowest possible confined space. And so when we're talking monkeys, we're not talking whole projects. We're talking like that W3 level. The next thing that needs to happen in order to move the ball forward is your monkey. Anybody else got good examples they want to share? Monkeys that are sitting on your desk right now?
Trying to convert accounts from COD to EFT payment.
Converting accounts from COD to EFT. So there's probably a monkey there that's, I got to make a list of which accounts we're going to target. And then the next account that I'm going to call, that's another monkey on the list. And then there's probably a list of monkeys for all the accounts that need to be contacted and how. It's important to break them down that way. It really is, because as we look at how we manage monkeys and delegate monkeys, if we think about the project as a whole, it sometimes seems daunting, right? I'm going to, Andrew, if you don't mind, I'm going to use your example and draw it out a little bit further. So if I've got a list of accounts, or if I've got the project, the whole big project of, I need to convert some of these accounts from COD to EFT. If I think about that project as a whole, it might be hard to delegate off to one of my team members. But if I think about it as monkeys, individual monkeys, it starts to look a little easier. For example, if the next thing I need to do is identify the list by using these three criteria, well, is that something I have to do, or is that a monkey that I might be able to delegate to someone else? Tell you what, don't worry about doing the whole project, but do me this favor. Take this list, look for every account that meets these three criteria, highlight them for me, and bring it back. Now I've taken a part of the project, delegated it off, and all I have to do is check the work when it comes back in, rather than feeling like I have this whole project sitting there waiting for me. Not only does it make your work more bite-sized and manageable, but it makes it more achievable to hand it off to other people. If the next monkey, once that list is compiled, is we need to call everybody on this list, well, each one of those calls is a monkey. It's the next call and the next call and the next call. Maybe I can break that list out now and hand it to several monkey managers. So, you know, this sales rep, call these three accounts. And this rep, you call these three. And this rep, you call these three. And then come back to me and let me know the results. Now, instead of me facing a daunting list of nine monkeys, I just have to make sure that those three monkeys got taken care of. It really is about what is the next thing, the next decision, the next task that needs to be taken care of. So don't let your monkeys get too big. Don't let them turn into these 800-pound gorillas that feel impossible and daunting. Focus on what is the next step, because that's how it's going to become easier to hand them off to others. So we've got all these monkeys. We know that they're out there, and we know that our people have monkeys too, right? Everybody that works for us, they've also got monkeys. They've got things that they're supposed to be doing, the next thing on their list. And it's very common for our employees to come to us with their monkeys and want help taking care of them, or more often, they want to take their monkey and give it to us all together. Common scenario, right? Somebody walks into your office and, hey boss, I got a problem and I don't know what to do with it. When they walk in with that monkey in hand, they're hoping you're going to say, you know what, I can solve that problem for you. Let me take that monkey and add it to my collection and put it on my desk, and now it's part of the zoo that I'm responsible for. But when we do that, we've not done them a favor. What we've actually done is give them a vote of no confidence. We've taken away a decision. We've taken away a learning opportunity. We've taken away a moment for them to grow and develop and try something new on their own. It's one thing to offer help and guidance and assistance, but it's another to just take the monkey away and say, we'll do it. So we want to make sure that our team hangs on to their monkeys as much as possible so that we can focus on the ones that are truly ours. And we want to delegate off as many monkeys as we can. So when a team member comes to you with a monkey and a problem and says, hey, I don't know what to do with this, don't let them hand off that monkey altogether. Instead, help them understand how they can care for that monkey. Well, what are your options? I don't know what my options are. Well, you should probably find out what your options are. I'll tell you what, talk to this person, go see this person, come up with two or three different options, come back to me with choices, and then I'll show you how we're going to make that choice. Now, when that team member leaves the office, the monkey is still right there with them. It's still their job to do the next thing to keep it going. Because when we take the decision, when we say, you know, I'll make that decision for you, we've taken that monkey, and now their progress is halted until we do it. In our superhero nature, we have clogged up the system by becoming the bottleneck through which everything must flow. In order for your team to take care of their own monkeys, you, and to be able to get rid of your own monkeys over time, you must do two things, two very important things. The first is you have to develop a team of competent monkey managers who can take care of their own monkeys and possibly more monkeys. Hopefully some of yours, so that you can go on and take care of even more monkeys. The other thing you have to be able to do as a leader is get over the insecurity and out of the comfort zone that is taking others' monkeys from them and making them as your own. So let's talk about the two sides of that and how it comes together. To achieve the first, if you really want to build a team that is full of monkey managers who can take care of things on their own and possibly more, you have to build a team that has a learning culture. What's a learning culture? A learning culture is a team that believes in the value that knowledge creates empowerment. They share ideas and discoveries constantly. They ask questions relentlessly. They see everything as a teachable moment. A learning culture team is going to become more and more competent over time because they're going to constantly be learning how to better take care of monkeys. So here's the hard truth moment. You got to ask yourself, my team, do we have a learning culture? If you think you do, I'd love to hear some examples. So if you've got a team with a learning culture, tell us all, what are some ways that you exemplify that learning culture on your team? How are you sharing knowledge? How are you creating aha moments? How is your team learning from each other and from you on a regular basis?
I guess for my team, a few of the high performers, we have share success stories to the rest of the team when we have meetings of how they got certain tasks done.
Yep. Thank you, Derek. That's exactly it, right? So you've got a regular weekly meeting. If part of your regular weekly meeting includes sharing success stories, you have a learning culture, or at least you're on your way to building a good one. That's taking the opportunity to say, here's what's going right, here's what we can learn from, and letting people bounce off each other and discuss what's making progress. So that's a great example of a learning culture in progress.
Jeff, I have a monthly managers meeting, and it's so many times I've had bosses that, you know, you stay in that silo. They work with the on-premise guy, they work with the large format guy. So I like to have a monthly meeting to just expose everybody to the other departments and stuff and how they solve problems and stuff like that, because they're all, you know, similar, even though they're different. So I think that works and nurtures the learning culture.
Absolutely, it does. When you expose your teams to all parts of the business, when they have access and communication with people from all the different channels that we work in, you're building a learning culture, because they're going to be able to see things from different perspectives. They're going to bring up what's going on for them, and somebody that may not be a normal part of their workflow can sit there and go, you know, from where I sit, or we actually had a problem similar, but we solved it this way. You're bringing new perspectives, new ideas, and new sight to what's going on. That is definitely helping to build that learning culture.
All right, we've done cross training between, you know, different departments.
Definitely.
And different people within that department that handle different duties, so that different points of view get to see what others do and ask questions and think about different things.
Absolutely. Cross training is a great way to not only create a safety net for your own team. You've got people that can do and back up each other, so that when vacations or time off happens, you've got someone that can step in to help out. But it gives, again, it's that fresh set of eyes. It's somebody coming in and being able to challenge the basic assumptions, because a learning culture team is constantly challenging their status quo. Why do we do what we do? How can we make it better? And when you cross train people, you give them that opportunity to go, okay, I see what you're doing, but why do we do that? And so often you'd be amazed how when teaching somebody else to do something, the teacher has to sit there and go, you know, I don't know why we do that. I just know that that's the way it is. And those are the moments that allow the team to, again, turn everything into a teachable moment, become endlessly curious and go, well, maybe there's a better way overall that we could approach or solve a problem. This is all part of that learning culture. And thank you all for those who shared. I know there's a bunch of good stuff happening out there. I'm challenging you that if you don't have a learning culture on your team as a leader, you need to decide, what can I do to start instilling one? Because teams that have learning cultures are teams that can become monkey managers. They understand the why. They learn how to make decisions. They learn how to solve problems. If your team doesn't have a learning culture, it's probably because you're too superhero, taking everything on for them, solving everything for them, not giving them a chance to learn, grow, or develop. It's tough. It's tough because a learning culture requires mistakes and it requires failure and sometimes doesn't work out the way that we hope. And oftentimes, you know, when we see those superhero managers, part of what they're trying to avoid is, well, I don't want them to mess things up because then they have to go back and fix it. And that slows us down. And that, you know, it doesn't let us move as quick as we want. We're so much to do and we're so busy and I can do it right the first time and it'll take them longer or they'll have to do it twice. But in between those seemingly servant-like statements are all the echoes of the authoritarianism that comes underneath it. That is why it's an authoritarian approach. You're not letting them try. You're not letting them do. You're taking it away for what you believe are good reasons, but it's still, it's too autocratic, and it needs to be more balanced. And so that's what monkey management is driven towards, is letting people take care of their own monkeys, making them take care of their own monkeys so that they have the opportunity to learn and grow and do. And that leads into that second key, which is, as a leader, you have to get over those insecurities. You have to get out of that comfort zone of letting people take care of their own monkeys, or letting go of the monkeys that you want them to take care of. Think about this. If you're on the monkey bars, you got to let go of the stuff behind you if you want to move forward. And sometimes there's going to be mistakes. Some will be big, some will be small. Sometimes we'll fall off and have to jump back on. Sometimes we'll fall off and have to go back and start over. But the only way to get forward and get across the monkey bars is to let go of the stuff behind us. Teams with learning cultures see those mistakes as teachable moments. But there's no progress if you're holding on to what you've been doing in the past. And so that's the key to great monkey management. You know, it's more than just the task management side of things. Should you have a task management system? Of course you should. Of course you should. But monkey management is more than just task management. It's more than just a date book of when I'm going to follow up on this. It's more than just a list of things that I have outstanding that need to get done. Monkey management is about identifying everything at the next possible step, breaking it down to its simplest next move so that we don't get hung up on the big picture and paralyzed by too much to do. This is the next decision. This is the next step. And it's about creating a culture where everybody is focused on taking care of monkeys and are allowed to learn and grow and do to that end. So you've got this ideal. You've got this thing that you're going to strive for. The question, of course, how are we going to get there? I want to take a minute, open up the floor. What questions can I answer? What can we talk about? How can I employ the brain trust here to figure out if this sounds like something you want to achieve and you've got any reservations or hesitations about how to get there? This is your chance. How can we help all of us create a better learning culture and raise more monkey managers so that more monkeys are getting taken care of around here? What can I tell you guys about it? What do you want to know?
Well, sometimes you do have to take the monkey, I think. So I guess maybe my question would be is, if you think you do have to take that monkey, how do you turn that into be a learning moment as opposed to making that person wait on you?
Great question. That's a great question, because you're absolutely right. There are some times where your team is not yet going to be competent enough to handle a particular monkey. What I can say is I think the most important piece of that is, as much as possible, you want to try and do two things. One is you want to let whoever needs to be taking care of that monkey observe and shadow along as you take care of it. So if you have to pull a particular type of report or maybe analyze some data, that may be a moment where if they can't do it solo yet, sit with them as they go through it and have them work side by side so that you can coach and correct and offer advice in real time. That's number one, is that oftentimes you got to get back into that just basic training mode of tell, show, do, review, right? So I tell you what to do. I show you how to do it. We do it together. Then I let you go try it on your own and review your work. So we use that model when we're training new hires, but it works for any task that we want to teach people. So the tell, show, do, review, working side by side, that peer-to-peer shadowing is a great way to help them learn to take care of the monkeys the first one or two times until you've got the confidence they can do it themselves. The other part of that, and sometimes this is enough on its own where you may not have to sit there and watch every step, is make sure that when we're handing off any monkey, it's not just the result that we want, but we are explaining our whys and that they understand the approach we want them to take. And we talk a lot here about what versus how. And monkeys are the things that need to get done. They're what we have to do. How much of that or our ability to hand that off is going to depend a lot on how much we trust them and how good their how is. If they are going to do it the first choice way, if we trust them to make first choice decisions, then it's easier to hand things off. If they're new, we might have to spend more time with them. But sometimes just making sure they understand the reasoning behind what we're trying to accomplish is enough to help them get to the right place. So really make sure that they understand why they're doing the task, how it fits into the bigger picture, what it affects up, down, left, right, and sideways. That context can be a great way to be able to have more confidence in handing off the task, because if they run up against something that they don't know how to do themselves or don't have a decision, you know, make a decision that might be seemingly out of their league, if they know what that compass is, if we know they're going to go north because they know what first choice is, it'll help ease that quite a bit. So side by side, tell show, do review where necessary, and also making sure they understand the whys so that as they go off with their monkey, they know what fundamentally will take care of it are two big keys to that. And that is such a great question, right? Because again, we're trying to build that learning culture. We're trying to raise monkey managers. That's what we have to do. We have to pace, then lead. We have to see them do it, trust their confidence, be solid in their competency before we'll let them go, you know, outside of and do stuff without us overseeing it. So use that tell, show, do, review model. Watch them the first couple of times, give them smaller pieces. And again, you know, breaking down the monkeys into their smallest parts. If it's the simplest possible next step, if all they have to do is finish this piece of the report and bring it back to me for a check, you can oftentimes break down even smaller steps as another way to sort of give them a little bit of leash at a time. Instead of do three things, just do one, bring it back, do two, bring it back. It's still less on you. They're owning those monkeys, but there's more touch points and more places and opportunities as leaders to check their progress and check their results. That's another piece of that too.
What is a good way on teaching how to not take on everyone else's monkeys? Like sometimes we tend to, someone has a problem, we hear it or we're having a conversation. And if we, now it seems like, okay, I have the problem, I have the ball. But how do we teach to say, you know, that's not my ball to take. It's still somebody else's monkey to deal with. I may help you, but I'm not supposed to take that from you.
Great question, right? And the reason I spent so much time on the superhero concept at the top of this is it is the nature of the people in this organization in particular to take on that superhero role. We are all natural servants. That's why you guys were selected. We're all very good doers. That's why you guys were selected. So we have a tendency culturally to hire and perpetuate superheroes around here. And that's not a bad thing, but it can definitely be a challenging thing for good monkey management. So to your question, Jose, about how do we set that expectation? I think it starts with, again, building that learning culture that people have to feel safe and comfortable in failing and trying, and that not everything has to be perfect all the time. Because one of the reasons we tend to want to do it ourselves is a sense of perfectionism, right? We want to do it because we'll get it right. We don't have to wait for it to get done two times. We don't have to make a mistake or worry about it. We're going to do it right the first time. That's why we want to do it. That attitude, that mentality that we project as trying to be superheroes, our team will absorb that. They absorb everything from us. So if we strive for too much perfection, if we don't make mistakes, if we try to get it all right the first time, they're going to want to do that too, which is ultimately detrimental because A, when they feel like there's something they can't do right, they're going to want to hand it off to somebody else. And B, we're going to want to take it because we want it to be right as well. So I think one of the things you can do to get people to want to keep their own monkeys or to be comfortable taking on monkeys is to get them comfortable with the idea that mistakes are okay and that failure isn't failure, but it's a learning, teachable moment. So you got to be willing to screw up. You got to be willing to screw up in front of them. You got to share your own mistakes and your own failures. When you have team meetings, don't just talk about the wins. Talk about the stuff that didn't go right. I'll use a live example. I told you guys I'm working on this EO market tutorial video. Been working on it for 2 weeks. The first time I went through it, it was a disaster. The audio was a complete screw up. The syncing didn't come out right. I had to start from scratch, find a new piece of software, and do it all over again. Right? So, you know, that's taken me longer to get this project done than I've wanted to because I'm having to learn as I go and get into this new particular thing. The willingness you have as a leader to share your mistakes and share your failures and be okay with it and take them as a teachable moment will then translate into your teams. And when your teams feel comfortable making a mistake, that a mistake isn't going to get them a write-up or scolded, but that a mistake will be seen as a teachable moment, that's going to make them more empowered to want to try. And so oftentimes you do find that people don't want to take monkeys because they don't want to be accountable. They don't want to be responsible if things go wrong. Making it a safe environment to fail will help with that. Again, as a leader, we have to go first. And also, they have to see us stretching to take on more for ourselves so that they can stretch to take on more for themselves. And we have to see it as an opportunity for growth and development. So you have to constantly have those conversations around, you know, again, new things to be handed out or things to be delegated are opportunities to learn and grow. So if you come to the meeting and say, I've got my list of things I want to dump on you guys this week, they're not going to be very receptive to that. But if you come to the meeting and say, I've got a list of stuff that I can hand off of my plate so that if anybody who wants to learn or grow or do more can learn to do some of the stuff I do, who wants to step up and take some things, now you've put a culture in place that says taking on tasks isn't being dumped on and it isn't an opportunity to get made responsible or be held accountable. It's an opportunity to learn and grow, and mistakes are going to be okay, and you're going to get better from having done it. That's how you build the culture that lets people feel good about taking things on. Once that takes root, you'll start to see it. It's not going to happen quick. I should be very clear here. This is not something that you flip the switch on overnight. But again, remember, go back to the beginning of Blanchard. Reward what you want more of, redirect the stuff that you don't. If somebody comes to you with a mistake they made and you scold them, you're not going to get more admitted mistakes. But if they come to you with a mistake they made and you say, no big deal, thank you for trying, thank you for bringing it when you needed help, let's fix this and move on, you'll encourage the right behavior over and over again. And over time, you build a culture where people are hungry for those opportunities because they know that that you are failing forward and not being scolded or held back by it. To kick that off, I'll put one more capper on that, is as leaders, again, you guys set that expectation. So you want to build a culture with intentionality. Start at your next meeting. Start at the next meeting and say, you know what, guys, I want you guys to know, I just came back from the Monkey Management 2.0 class, and one of the things we talked about was building a learning culture. I want our team to have it. And so here's what that means, and I'm going to try and start laying that out, and I want you guys to know what's coming. Transparency is the best for getting your team to come where you want them to be. Just tell them what you're trying to do. Just say straight up, I want to build a learning culture. I want you guys to grow and develop and be able to be better monkey managers. And so I'm going to be challenging you to do more. And when you do more, I'm going to be grateful and thank you and reward you for it. And when you make a mistake, it's going to be fine. We're going to learn from it, get better at it, and not make it a second time. Set the target. You can't aim what you can't hit what you can't aim at. If your team doesn't know what you're trying to aim them at, they won't be able to get there. So define the target, and your team can go there as you direct them. Great question. All right. My final thought on this, and it fields right out of what we were just talking about, is remember, what gets rewarded is what's going to get repeated. That's a key component to this broader one-minute manager archetype that Blanchard and Spencer Johnson were laying down. If you want to have a learning culture, if you want people to step up and take more, if you want people to handle their own monkeys, you've got to recognize and reward when it happens. So you have to make recognition a part of your culture. You've got to make sure that when you get your team together, they need to talk about what went right. And you need to thank and reward publicly and praise the people who are doing things the way you want them done. And when they make mistakes, you need to redirect, not in a scolding, accountability, things are wrong kind of way, but in a teachable, okay, what did we learn? How are we going to get better? Mistakes happen, but what can we do to improve for next time? How you build that culture is going to be how your team goes. They'll go wherever you want them to. That's the job. You're the leader. That's the beauty of it. If your team is not the team you want to have, that's your fault. But if your team's not the team you want to have, that's your opportunity, because you get to make them into the team you want them to be. The trick is intentionality. You've got to decide, as a leader, who do I want to be? Am I going to be a pushover who lets everybody make their decisions and I just support them in any way I can, but I'm too easy and they get to do everything and they're not supported enough? Or am I going to try and be their superhero who never lets them fail, but also never lets them learn and never lets them grow? I hope you reject both ends of the extremes and come to a middle ground where I'm here to help you learn. I'm here to help you do. I'll take the things that I need to take, but you're going to take all the things that you need to take. And over time, our learning culture, our team is going to grow to be able to do more, take on more, handle more. Questions are going to be rewarded. People who try are going to be recognized. People who fail are going to be given a chance to get better and improve. And when you build that culture on your team, then you will be building a team that will continue to accelerate their performance time and time again, which is good. Which is good, not because it's good for the company, not because it's good for your bonus check. It's good because at this company, we hire people who are ambitious and successful and they want to win. And as leaders, if we're being their superhero, we're preventing them from winning. We're winning on their behalf. We're doing it for them. It's not what they want. They want to win. Our job should be to facilitate their winning in every way possible. So teach them, develop them, make everything that learning moment. Build that learning culture on your team, and then watch as they are able to take more and more monkeys over time.